You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a crossover edition between Orange and Brown Talk and Buckeye Talk, our annual tradition here on these podcasts of doing a first-round mock draft, the NFL draft, kicking off on Thursday. So we've got a whole crew of people here. I am Dan Lobby. I am representing the Orange and Brown Talk here. Tim Bielik has been on the Orange and Brown Talk as well, our draft expert. So you'll hear him chiming in on all of these picks. He's going to make some picks as well. From Buckeye Talk, we've got Stephen Means, Nathan Baird, and Andrew Gillis. Of course, they've been busy recently with the spring game, transfer portal. It never ends for Ohio State. So if you're listening to this on the Orange and Brown Talk feed, head over to Buckeye Talk and get subscribed to those guys to get caught up on everything going on with the Buckeyes. And then our rivalry reporter and columnist, Jimmy Watkins, who you've heard on a number of podcasts. I know he's been jumping on Wine and Gold Talk as well recently with the Cavs in the playoffs. He is joining us here. So we're going to do this like we do it every year. Everyone has been assigned a set number of teams. Just run through that real quick. Jimmy's got Chicago, Tennessee, New Orleans, Pittsburgh, and Green Bay. Andrew has Washington, Atlanta, Indy, Miami, and Buffalo. Tim's got New England, the Jets, Seattle, Philly, and Detroit. Stephen has Arizona, Denver, Jacksonville, Dallas, and Kansas City. Nathan's got the Chargers, Minnesota, Cincinnati, San Francisco, Tampa Bay, and I'll take the Giants, Vegas, Rams, and Baltimore. I'm sure you caught all that. There will be a quiz later. Let's get to it. We're going to go through. We can do trades. We can do whatever we want as we pick these teams. Jimmy Watkins, you are representing the Chicago Bears with the number one overall pick. In real life, this seems like a foregone conclusion. Here on this mock draft, is it also a foregone conclusion?
I mean, I think we want art to imitate life as much as we can here, right? So I will choose Caleb Williams with the first overall pick. It's a weird thing this draft season where it feels like we're doing a lot of nitpicking of Caleb Williams at the same time, not seeing a lot of people taking him down from the number one spot on their boards, right? So it's like basically the rub with Caleb Williams is this guy is a brilliant manufacturer of creation outside of structure, but does he rely on that talent a little bit too much, right? Like, you watch some of his stuff at USC, it seems like sometimes he's ignoring some easy stuff in pursuit of something great that may not always be there, and sometimes at the expense of the football that he's holding. But I think personally that that a lot of that is because the supporting cast around him wasn't awesome this year. I don't know that the system he was playing in was awesome this year. And I think that, oddly enough, for a team that just kind of ruined the development track of another quarterback who looked awesome coming out of college in the Chicago Bears, system in place for him right now. Like, they have a good supporting cast. They have Keenan Allen, DJ Moore. They have another pick that they could potentially use on a wide receiver or an offensive lineman. And I mean, it's a new coaching staff, so or a new offensive coordinator, I should say. So we'll see what that ends up looking like. But I'm encouraged by how this fit could be for the Bears.
Anybody want to take the anti? Does anybody think that the Bears should go a different direction?
I grew up following the Bears, a Bears fan, I guess you would say.
and am an extreme skeptic on anything they do here being the correct move. Like, whatever the wrong move is, that's probably what they'll end up doing, and it'll turn out wrong because it's them. That's the pessimistic fan that's still buried down inside me somewhere, because I've just seen this go wrong so many times. I do think Jimmy is right to some extent. My trepidation when they drafted Fields, because I thought Fields would be a successful NFL quarterback too, my trepidation was that they were having to trade draft capital on a pretty problematic roster in order to trade up and get him, and thereby leaving him without weapons, without protection. And we saw what happened with that over a couple of years. And I think Jimmy's right. The good thing about being in the number one spot, I mean, yes, you're taking a big swing that could miss. There was a lot of safety in keeping Fields and in trading this pick and getting a ton of capital, trading down, still probably getting one of the top three receivers, still getting a great tackle potentially early on, you know, in that middle, you know, 7 through 10 spot. But the good thing about taking this swing here, and especially since they have another first rounder, is you're not using extra capital. It's like, this is the one shot, and it's contained to this guy. And I think that for the long-term health of the franchise, this was the right way to go. I am not 100% sold on Caleb Williams, just because of any number of reasons. I think what he's saying about him being a guy who creates well off platform and out of structure is true, and there's great value to that. I have some concerns about him just not always excited about what I've seen from him, maybe emotionally over the years. But if you've got the talent, there's probably something that they can mold there and make that work. So this was, I think, whoever you end up taking number one, if you're the Bears, I think this was ultimately the right call.
Was that a painted fingernails take there, Nathan, about the emotions?
I don't know if it has so much to do with the painted. That is one sliver of an overall picture that that hasn't always impressed me with Williams. But the talent is clearly there.
Ladies and gentlemen, the oldest person on this pod doesn't like a young person painting their fingernails.
Like I said, it doesn't have anything to do with the fingernails, but and if I turn out to be wrong, I turn out to be wrong. So be it.
This isn't music.
I think for me, it's just the Lincoln Riley number one pick at quarterback. We've seen that structure before. And Baker, I mean, this is orange and brown talk. Baker was good, but there was a ceiling there, and there's a real reason they moved on from him. Kyler Murray has been good, but I mean, it feels like there's been a ceiling on him since he got to the NFL. Even with Jalen Hurts only getting Lincoln Riley for 1 year, the Eagles are a very good overall football team. I wouldn't say Jalen Hurts is the number one reason why that team was in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. So I think what the track record of Lincoln Riley's quarterbacks in the NFL have shown us is it works in college football and it's going to win you a Heisman Trophy, but it's not going to necessarily do that thing at the same level in the NFL. And maybe I might be wrong about Caleb Williams. I'm just on alert for show me a Lincoln Riley quarterback that doesn't have the same story as this Lincoln Riley quarterback before he came into the NFL.
Okay. I'm sorry. This is my pick, so I feel the need to defend it, but are we not just what you did right there, Stephen? Is that not just the Ohio State quarterbacks don't work out in the NFL? Just
no. Yeah, you're over? Right. What did it take, though? An historic rookie season from a quarterback for us to break that mold, right? CJ wasn't just
good. Can Caleb Williams not break that mold? Is Caleb Williams not the best quarterback that Lincoln Riley's ever had?
We'll see.
That's a separate debate that doesn't really probably fit into our time structure here today to go back through all of those.
I will say this. Shout out to us for doing exactly what they do in the NFL by taking 45 minutes to talk about something we all knew was going to happen before we got on this pod.
At least we made the pick quickly.
Just real quick, last year on Buckeye Talk, I said a former employee who shall not be named and I had a brief exchange on that pod because I had the audacity to say if C.J. Stroud and Caleb Williams are in the same draft, I would take C.J. Stroud as an NFL quarterback over Caleb Williams. And I think I've been vindicated at least on half of that, that what C.J. Stroud did is a true – and those are very distinct types of quarterback. C.J. Stroud is not that comparable to Caleb Williams. So I want to see more C.J. Stroud from Caleb Williams, I think, to say that I think he could have that level of success in the NFL.
Okay, we're not going to spend 10 minutes on every pick, I promise. I don't think. We'll see what happens here. Tim, I want to get your thoughts on the quarterbacks, but let's kind of move this along because I'm guessing we're going to have another one come off the board here at number two with Andrew picking for Washington.
Yeah, for the record, I do want to say, you know, kind of going back to the conversation we're just having, 45 minutes to beat the first pick. I think we learned a couple years ago the NFL basically told the Jaguars you have to wait till 3 minutes on the clock before they can pick Trevor Lawrence. So that's not a team thing. That's an NFL mandated thing. I just want to put that out there right now because we're all going to complain about this Thursday night when the Bears take an hour to do what we all know they're going to do. But strictly when it comes to Caleb Williams, I think he's different from Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. I get the Lincoln Riley thing, but those guys didn't have the supernatural arm talent that Caleb Williams has. And I mean supernatural arm talent. Like, I don't take that lightly. Like, it's Mahomes-esque talent. He plays the game like Mahomes. I'm not saying he's going to be Patrick Mahomes. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Mahomes, but he's got a legitimate top five ceiling for me because just of his ability to freelance, create space and time for himself. And again, supernatural arm talent. I would put it ahead of C.J. Stroud's, and I said C.J. Stroud last year had the best pure arm talent in this class. Caleb Williams is better from a pure arm standpoint than C.J. Stroud was.
Okay, and I'm going to complain when we're at pick five, and we're only 3 hours in. Let's let Andrew make his pick here at number two for Washington.
Yeah, I was very happy I got Washington because I have a very particular belief about what they're going to do. And Jimmy had a point about kind of life imitating art here. Throughout this whole process with Washington, it's been, oh, they have a new coach, they have a new GM, so they're going to make a splash. They're going to trade up for Caleb Williams, the DC guy. They have the draft picks. And then it was, well, the team's terrible, so they're going to trade back. And then it was, well, they're going to take Jaden Daniels, and it's Jaden Daniels, he's the Heisman Trophy winner, blah, blah, blah. And that has kind of had the most staying power, but throughout the process, there's always been a little bit of J.J. McCarthy, like, hey, J.J. McCarthy's here. Like, there was a report at the NFL owners meetings, like, they could take him. I think that has all been by design. I think Adam Peters, their new GM, who came from San Francisco, who was part of this in 2022 with the whole Trey Lance and Justin Fields and Mac Jones and Zach Wilson thing, where there was a lot of smoke out there. I think they've been throwing smoke for 3 months. I think they're going to take Drake May, and that's who I'm going to take. I think Drake May is the second best quarterback in this class. They need a quarterback. I think he's got enough elite level upside to where you feel good about it. I mean, he's got good size. He's got good athleticism. I think you watch some of the throws he makes and the windows that he hits are pretty impressive. They're pretty remarkable. You worry about the interceptions. You worry about the turnover gene a little bit. But, I mean, there's not another Caleb Williams in this class, right? This isn't, you know, Andrew Luck and RG3 coming out in 2012, fittingly, also Washington at two. Like, there wasn't another, oh, slam dunk one, slam dunk two. But I think they have been playing this perfectly, and I think – in 48 hours from when you're listening to this, Drake May will be a Washington Commander.
Tim, is Drake May the second best quarterback in this draft?
Yes, and I think the reason, you know, there's all the smoke, you know, Andrew pretty much mentioned, you know, maybe it's a smoke screen. I like to think of it as what I like to dub the shiny new car theory. And that's, you know, we've heard about Drake May for as long as we've heard about Caleb Williams. Then all of a sudden, Jaden Daniels has an amazing season. Again, not to take anything away from Jaden Daniels, but after spending a year talking about Drake May, all of a sudden, Jaden Daniels bursts onto the scene and, you know, people are, you know, attracted to the hype of Jaden Daniels. And I get it. You know, we've seen guys like Lamar Jackson and all of them, you know, like Lamar Jackson just take over the NFL with his running ability. And Jaden Daniels does that, maybe not at that level, but close enough to where I think we're forgetting just, you know, Drake May is like the prototype for, you know, what you want the modern quarterback, you know, big mobility, maybe doesn't run as well as Daniels does, but unlike Daniels, I think May has an arm that can hit any possible throw on the field. He does need to curb back some of his decision-making, his risky throws, but I think, you know, that's stuff that kind of works itself out in the pros with good coaching. And, you know, he comes into a good situation. He gets to throw to Terry McLaurin for a living.
Who would take Jaden here? Anybody? No one. Okay. So, Dre, this is like a consensus pick. Nice job there, Andrew. We found consensus, which brings us to, I think, the most interesting pick in the draft, and that is number three. And so this is Tim making this pick. And I would just like to say, since I'm the one talking right now, Tim, I would love to have this draft pick. I am the New York Giants at number six. I'm sick of Daniel Jones, and I would absolutely love to have this draft pick so that I could take Jaden Daniels. And look, you as New England, you have one of the worst rosters in the NFL. You're going to be a bad team this year. Why not just collect a bunch of picks? I've got some picks for you.
Let's hear it.
Okay, well, obviously, we'd give you number six, and then take your pick. What else do you want? I got 47. I got 70. I'll go into next year. What do you want for this pick?
Well, at the minimum, I want two twos, and then who else? I want to pluck a player. Part of me wants to pluck a player, so maybe...
I don't like any of my players, so you can have whoever you want.
Neither do the Giants.
It's like the movie Draft Day just playing out on a podcast live. It's like, I want David Damn Putney because I said so.
And then I need some pancakes too for it. Yeah, this makes for great podcasting. Can you also throw in Darren Waller?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Darren Waller. You can have
and Jalen Hyatt.
Oh, okay. Now, all right. You had me at Darren Waller. I just took.
Why don't
Jalen
you start
Hyatt
with Darren
year.
Waller and end with Jalen Hyatt?
No, I want both.
I just took Jalen Hyatt last year. I'm about to draft a quarterback. I don't know if I want to give up one of my young receivers. I mean, you can have Darren Waller.
Hey, I just saw a report come on my phone that the Patriots have had quote laughable offers about the third overall pick.
Here's the problem. I'm not going to part with. I'm not going to part with Jalen.
Dan, what was your favorite Jalen Hyatt highlight last year?
Okay, that's fair.
So,
but I just took him last year, and I'm giving up picks, so I can't. I'm not going to be able to pick a wide receiver in the.
How about this? There's two offers on the table.
Okay.
Our first for six, the second this year, the second next year, and Waller, or three for six. Your second this year, your third next year. And Jalen Hyatt.
I'm doing the one with Darren Waller.
Well, I'm trying to think. Because if I'm the Patriots, Dane Daniels or do I want Shedeur Sanders behind an actual offensive line next year?
Are you willing to put Deion Sanders on your staff? Because if the answer is no, then you don't want Shedeur Sanders.
Hey, if you put Shedeur Sanders behind even a remotely average offensive line, Colorado's an 8-win football team. I'm very pro Shedeur Sanders, so you know what? Let's do it. I get me Darren Waller, and I get to rebuild this roster.
All right, I'm doing it. The New York Giants are moving. You can have Daniel Jones. Do you want Daniel Jones?
Why would I want Daniel Jones? I have Jacoby Brissett. I'd rather have Jacoby Brissett than Daniel Jones right now.
Okay, that's fine. Well,
I just want to put it out there that moving back from 3 to 6 without getting a quarterback and a first round pick is crazy.
Hey, I got
crazy.
I got two twos and I'm bank. And I think Jane Daniels, you know, I don't know if he's as much a needle mover for the Giants. Plus I'm taking away one of his weapons. And it also means Dan doesn't get Malik Neighbors. I mean, you look at who they have at a receiver, the best option they have after Darren Waller is Darius Slayton. And let's be real. Darius Slayton is not exactly what I would call a needle mover.
Wandale Robinson erasure.
Yeah, I'd rather have Jalen Hyatt.
All right. We're making the pick, and we are going to take Jaden Daniels. We're changing course here with the New York Giants. We're going with a different quarterback, dynamic quarterback. I love watching him play. I don't know. Personally, for me, if I'm the Giants and I'm making this pick, I believe he will. For me personally, I don't know if he's going to take some hit in like his first game because he plays a little recklessly and be done for like 2 years. But the player himself, I love him. I'm going to take him. And the New York Giants have a new quarterback. Very exciting day in New York for sure.
Yeah.
Here. So that brings us to we're past the quarterbacks now. And I love that we have Buckeye Talk guys on this pod.
Are we past the quarterbacks now?
Well, I guess we'll see. Oh. But with Arizona going on the clock, this is Steven. And of course, there's a pretty prominent name here from Ohio State, who most people believe is the best receiver on the board. But over the last few months, there has been some buzz building for another receiver. Or maybe, Steven, you've quietly auctioned off this pick and somebody else is going to make it. So what are we doing here at number four?
So obviously the first three picks went about the way I expected them to go in terms of who was coming off the board. And that probably takes some of the value that Nathan and I were discussing about taking that number four pick. Now that some things have shaped out a little bit differently and
he's going to have an opportunity to take a quarterback with his next pick here, because I think I can overthink this, or I can be simple and just take the best player in the draft. And I'm just going to take the best player in the draft and take Marvin Harrison Jr. and give Kyler Murray a true number one receiver. And you know, as an organization, we've already said we're in on Kyler Murray being our starting quarterback. This is year two of Jonathan Gannon as the head coach. Let's give him a wide receiver one from a place who the last couple of years has put wide receivers in the league who were ready from day one to be contributors. You look at Garrett Wilson, look at Chris Olave, Jackson Smith, the Jigba, not quite the same rollout in Seattle, but he was still a quality contributor for the Seahawks this past season. And Marvin Harrison Jr. might be the best of all of them. So let's go. Year two of Gannon. We're all in on Kyler Murray. Let's go. Give you Marvin and let's see what the Cardinals can do.
Does anyone on this podcast want to make the Malik Nabers case? Because there has been this buzz building over the last couple weeks of maybe Malik Nabers is the more dynamic receiver. And you know, you know what you're going to get out of Marvin Harrison. It's going to be great. You know, you're going to write it in Sharpie for the next 10 years, but Malik Nabers might be Ja'Marr Chase. He might be Tyreek Hill. He might be one of these receivers. Would anyone take Malik Nabers here?
Well, to me, I think if you're the Cardinals, it's a matter of, even if you like Harrison the most, do you like him better than the draft capital you're going to acquire plus whatever receiver you would then end up with? Because I think the Cardinals did this last year, if you remember. They traded out of 3 to Houston and then traded back up to 7 to still take Paris Johnson. And I could absolutely see them trading off of 4. And then I tried to actually talk Steven into this. Trade off of 4 and then trade back up to 5 or 6. You're probably still getting a little bit of capital in that process. And then you're ending up with, maybe you don't, I mean, actually, in that case, you're probably still getting Harrison, because you're trading, whoever's trading to 4 is probably taking a quarterback. Like that, at least that was the scenario I was presenting to him. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Cardinals on draft day, draft night, don't end up with Marvin Harrison Jr., but it's not at 4.
Steven, were you getting, or other people on this pod reaching out to you? Was this pick, were guys wanting this pick?
There was an ongoing conversation that would have potentially ended me up with the 9th pick between conversations I was having with Nathan and then trying to flip that and talk with Jimmy as well. But I think last year, a series of events happened that created a world where Paris Johnson was still on the table, right? You know, the Texans ending up with the number 2 and number 3 picks and being locked in with, we're going to take our quarterback, we're going to take our edge rusher, that's our cornerstone, and let's go. We've got a brand new starting quarterback. I don't think the Cardinals are quite in the same situation. I don't think anybody in the NFL in terms of top 10 picks are quite in the same situation where they need both and they have a genuine opportunity to go get both of your cornerstones at the same time, or also the picks around them could allow the Cardinals to be like, okay, we're 3 right now, but we love Paris. We just don't love him at 3. We love him at 6. Let's get the 6. I don't think that plays out the same way. And when that's not the case, maybe you just keep it simple and go with who you think is the best player in the draft to begin with.
I just can't believe you paired Marvin Harrison with a Lincoln Riley quarterback.
I know.
How mean of you.
I know. Listen, Ryan Day's quarterbacks do pretty well with Ohio State receivers. Let's see if Lincoln Riley can do the same thing.
I think this is interesting. Arizona's just interesting in general because they were in the, hey, are they tanking for Caleb boat this time a year ago? And now they're sticking with Kyler.
Right.
And honestly, I almost wonder, so we just made that trade with New England, and it's really easy to look at it and say, hey, we'll take a quarterback next year. What if New England backs their way into 6 wins somehow, and they have the number 4 pick again next year, the number 3 pick next year, and they don't get the pick of the litter? I think it's – now, the good thing for Arizona is they had Kyler Murray already. New England does not have that. So that's why I'm really curious about what New England's going to do. If they just decide, hey, we got an opportunity to get a guy, let's get him, or do we take a chance and roll the dice on next year? So let's keep moving here to number 5, Nathan and the LA Chargers.
So yeah, like I said, I've been shopping this pick around because if there was going to be a 4th quarterback on the board, because there's obviously a scenario where quarterbacks go with the first 4 picks, and now the Chargers are left to take which one of the 3 receivers that they want. But I also see a scenario here where, again, there's so much draft capital available for them to acquire that moving back also makes a lot of sense. So if there's anybody I've talked to,
let's go. Let's go. I'm in.
I'm in. That 11th and 23 for that fifth, for this fifth pick, that Broncos pick. I think that's what you offered me, if I'm getting this correctly.
No, that's what I offered you when you I was trying to convince you to trade out of four. That's what the the Vikings can trade. That's what me as the Vikings can trade to me as the Chargers for the fifth pick. I think I had said if you want to, if Denver would be a 12 and a 2025 first for five and something like a 2025 third or something like that.
Okay.
But I think they would, if, given that, they would probably take the Vikings offer and get two firsts this year.
This
probably,
I didn't think this through when I was assigning these teams, but yeah, we've got like a little bit of Nathan as the GM of both teams can kind of do what he wants here.
I like the idea of running a trade by yourself.
I'm well, but there is, again, art should imitate life. And it's like, do we think the Chargers would trade up? I'm sorry. Do we think the Vikings need a quarterback so much and are enamored enough with JJ McCarthy that they would trade up here? Or would they take who some people think is the best receiver in the draft? And I've been grappling with that, but I think what they would do, because I think they need help enough places, I think they would probably make the trade. So I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give, I mean, for our purposes, all that really matters is, I guess, the 11 and the 23 for the five.
Yeah.
There'd have to be some other things along with it. Mm-hmm. Like, there'd be some other things coming from the Chargers.
Yeah, and when Minnesota made that trade with Houston to get that extra pick, most people believed it was, hey, they're going to go get a quarterback. So I think this makes sense. Little insider trading here. But I think this is the deal that makes sense. I think Minnesota will target either the Chargers or the Cardinals.
So I'm going to make that trade. And now it's just still me on the board taking JJ McCarthy for the Vikings at five.
I love the idea of Jim Harbaugh making the trade with the team that ends up taking his quarterback. That's great.
Yep.
You're going to love him. You're going to love him.
What do you guys all think of JJ McCarthy as a pro? Like, I'm just curious, especially the Ohio State guys. You've seen a lot of him. And Tim, I want your opinion too. Whoever wants to go first here, what do you think of JJ McCarthy long term? Is this, can he thrive? Was he being held back at Michigan in some ways? Can he be a good pro?
I can go first, I guess. I think as far as pure intangibles go, JJ McCarthy is as good as anybody in this draft. I mean, purely intangibles. I mean, he's got the outstanding demeanor. He's got the clutch gene to him. He's got that leadership thing. Like I said, when you look at purely non-football attributes, JJ McCarthy might be number one out of this group. The question is, you know, again, like you said, how limited was he, you know, in the last few weeks of the season? You know, maybe there were times when he wasn't as good as he needed to be. I keep thinking of that Penn State game where Michigan ran the ball, what, 30-some consecutive times in that game? So, I understand why Michigan did that, because they had basically an NFL offensive line that they could run behind. They had Blake Corum, Donovan Edwards, and all those sorts of things. I always do get in my mind that, like, when Michigan has needed it, J.J. McCarthy has given it to them. The Ohio State game in particular last in 2023, you know, he came up with some big throws and some big plays when they absolutely needed to make it. You know, the comeback against Alabama, the same thing. Washington, I thought he played solid in that game. So that's why, I mean, I'm not a GM, but I mean, if I'm looking for pure intangibles, if I'm looking for a pure leader in my franchise, that's J.J. McCarthy. And then it comes down to, is his talent enough where he can meet the ceiling, where if he's talented enough, then the intangibles carry him over the top and make him worth that pick? That's the thing I would have to weigh.
Jimmy and I were actually just having a conversation about this in our Buckeye Talk pod last week about J.J. McCarthy, and it's just, he's just such a fascinating quarterback prospect, because there's this Brock Purdy of college football element to him where we're still trying to figure out, did Michigan just win a national championship because his quarterback is really good, or because everything else is around him good and his job is to just not get in the way of that at times? And I think we're also having that conversation with Brock Purdy, but JJ McCarthy, if this is what ends up actually happening where the Vikings take him, this is not necessarily the same level as what he had at Michigan. Now he's going to have Justin Jefferson for now, apparently, but he's not going to have the same environment around him that he had at Michigan, where he can't just be what Brock Purdy is to the 49ers. So I do think we're going to find out just how good J.J. McCarthy is and has been for the last couple of years, because he's going to be asked to do some things a little bit more consistently. That, to Tim's point, he showed up in moments, right? You remember that Ohio State game? He had a couple of throws where it's like, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh yes, 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 yes. Great throw. He's going to have to do that a lot more often in Minnesota, where he's in a pretty decent division up there. And so if this is what comes true here, and so I think halfway through the season, we're all going to go, oh, okay, Michigan really just had a dude at quarterback who they only needed to be a dude in moments, and now he gets to do it all the time. Or it's going to be Jim Harbaugh was really smart for not letting this kid throw the ball in the second half against Penn State.
I just want to say, as someone who's probably written as many J.J. McCarthy headlines as Michigan beat writers over the last couple of years, I could probably derail this entire – we could make this entire podcast a J.J. McCarthy podcast.
Let's do this.
I'll just say this. When Tim said if it was just the non-football stuff, he'd be number one, that's perfect right there. That's perfect. That's what Jim Harbaugh has been telling us for, you know, 700 days now. I wrote at the Combine – this is the last thing I'm going to say about J.J. because, again, I could derail the whole thing. I wrote at the Combine. I did a little statistical exercise. Top 10 draft picks at quarterback – who have thrown the least amount of pass attempts per game in college. J.J. McCarthy is the second fewest. The fewest is Trey Lance, and that didn't work out. So, food for thought.
Tim, did me as the Vikings have to do this because you as the Patriots would have taken him at 6? I guess we can transition to the next pick.
It entered into the conversation. I will say that I will admit maybe that the Vikings kind of saved me a little bit from, you know, the smartest guy in the room syndrome. I will say that, because as much as we could have taken J.J. McCarthy, there's needs all like Dan talked about earlier. The Patriots are basically in the same position as when I had the Arizona Cardinals last year. We need a football team.
Okay, so we are going to take a break and then we'll see where Tim goes.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Back on our crossover pod, Orange Brown Talk and Buckeye Talk. We are going through the first round of the mock draft. We've made it 5 picks in a crisp 30 minutes. So now we move on to number 6, the New England Patriots, who traded back. They gave me the number 3 pick as the Giants to take Jaden Daniels. So now it's the Patriots at number 6. Tim, who are you taking here?
It's a tough decision because you have two studs, Malik Nabers from LSU and Joe Alt, the left tackle from Notre Dame. But so then for me, it comes down to the depth chart. And when I look at the New England Patriots depth chart, do I think, you know, Chukwuma Okorafor can at least be a serviceable offensive tackle? Can I get away with it being a stopgap with 2 second round picks and a draft that's deep at offensive tackle? Or do I think the trio of Kendrick Osborne, DeMario Douglas, and KJ Osborne could be good enough at receiver where I could pick up, you know, middling pieces, you know, 2s and 3s in the second round, and maybe use one of those second round picks on maybe like Ladd McConkey, for example. This was a decision I kind of made about 2 minutes ago. So with the 6th pick, the New England Patriots select Malik Nabers, wide receiver, LSU. 3-level receiver. I mean, there's very little he doesn't do well. Attacks well in the short, intermediate, and the deep ball. Speed, body control, size, you name it, Malik Nabers pretty much has it.
I like this. I like take the skill, take the guy that you think can be an elite skill player at this spot in the draft. I know tackle matters, and you got to find guys to play that position. But if you have a chance to take a guy who, again, is getting these comparisons to Ja'Marr Chase and Tyreek Hill, and even if some of them might be a little outlandish, if you can get that guy, I think you have to take him in the spot. And especially if you're New England and you just have really no dynamic playmakers at wide receiver as it is. So I like this pick. The Tennessee Titans. Jimmy, you get the Titans here. You're actually going to make 2 of our next 3 picks. We're going Tennessee, Atlanta, and Chicago. But you are on the clock with, I don't know, maybe the most boring franchise in the NFL right now, the Tennessee Titans. Take it away.
So I want to make this, before I make my pick, I want to talk to the New York Jets for a second, because as we discussed during the pre-recordings, we did have conversations with the Jets about potentially flipping 7 and 10. And I particularly want to talk to the New York Jets quarterback, Aaron Rodgers. And I just want Aaron Rodgers to know
the difference between... We don't want Aaron Rodgers jumping on this podcast.
True. Aaron, let's try to keep this conversation on the tracks real quick. All right? We're talking football right now. And I want him to know that he could be throwing to Rome Odunze and Garrett Wilson this fall, but the Jets thought that Javon Kinlaw was too important for you to get Rome Odunze. So you might not throw to Rome Odunze. The Titans are taking Joe Alt, by the way, because we need offensive linemen, and we probably need a receiver too, because we're paying two 30-year-old dudes, like two of the highest cap hits on our team. But like, it kind of seems like, again, art imitating life, it kind of seems like we're trying to win a little bit.
Yeah.
we're paying L'Jarius Sneed at corner. And so, you know, we got Peter Skoronski already. We're going to see what we have in Will Levis. If we're going to see what we have in Will Levis, we got to give him a fair shake in pass pro, right? So we're taking Joe Alt, but I just want Aaron Rodgers to know that Rome Odunze, if he goes in the next two picks, it's on. Talk to Joe Douglas and talk about Javon Kinlaw.
I thought we were going to have a trade there on the spot. That was kind of a little bit of an okie doke, and then you just make your pick. So there you go. Yeah, the Titans are in a weird spot. Like, do they have a quarterback? Don't they have a quarterback? Are they trying to win? Are they not trying to win? I don't know. They just fired Mike Vrabel, which I don't know why anybody would ever fire Mike Vrabel, but what do you know?
That speaks to that, how weird their position is, right? Like, it seems to me that Mike Vrabel was like, we're still trying to win, right? And the Titans were like, ah. Mike Vrabel was like, well, if we're not trying to win, I'm not trying to do this. And the Titans were like, ah. All right.
I know what you're saying about them being boring, but I think this is really good value for Joe Alt here. So it's like, it's super boring, but it worked out really well for the Titans the way those first six picks went.
I also think of where Rand Carthon, the GM, came from. He came from the 49ers, and I will say I really loved their draft last year. I like Peter Skoronski. I like what he's done. I loved Tyjae Spears out of Tulane in that draft, and he had a pretty good rookie season. So, you know, nothing wrong with, if you're trying to imitate the 49ers, build up the offensive line, that's the smart move. I was torn between Alden Neighbors at six, so it's no surprise Alt goes at seven. He has true, you know, 15-year left tackle, multiple all-pro potential at left tackle.
Okay, Andrew, you are up at number eight here for Atlanta. And just a quick note, Jimmy giving that big speech, all about Rome Odunze. And by the way, he picks next for the Chicago Bears. So we'll see what happens. But Andrew, you're up first for Atlanta.
Yeah, I figured this was going to happen, and I didn't want it to happen because there's two guys that I have set my sights on. And I was figuring, I mean, if Joe Alt was here, I would have taken Joe Alt. I think Jake Matthews is a cap casualty eventually for the Falcons. He's getting up there in age, a lot of money. I think that would have been a really, really nice replacement for Atlanta whenever you kind of age out Kirk. But perhaps this is a little off the board. Considering what they've done this offseason, I'm going to take Rome Odunze at eight. And I'm going to load up on skill position players. I think Raheem Morris coming in as a defensive coach is going to get that defense into shape. And I think you want to give Zach Robinson the OC and just say, like, here you go, have fun. So for those counting at home, the situation is now Kirk Cousins is your quarterback, Bijan Robinson's your running back, Kyle Pitts is your number one tight end, and you're rolling out three wide receiver sets of Drake London, Rome Odunze, and Darnell Mooney. I'm feeling outstanding about that. I debated a defensive player here, because I do think the Falcons need defensive players, which I think they can do later in the draft. But Rome Odunze is Rome Odunze, and look at all the other successful teams in the league. If you don't have a super weapon at quarterback, you kind of need another option besides your number one. So I'm going Rome Odunze.
I just like this idea of Atlanta just collecting first round skill players. Just,
yeah.
Every year it's a new one.
Like, yeah, just never worried about the trenches at all. Ever worried about the trenches. Dallas Turner was right there, man.
That was the guy that I was considering.
Clearly, everyone. I'm a Falcons fan, guys, so like, I want Dallas Turner. This should have been very simple, but apparently the Falcons are a 7-on-17.
Rome Odunze is going to catch a touchdown pass in week one, and you're going to text me and say, never mind.
No, I'm not. I'm going to go, oh, he's going to catch one next week, too, and we can't get any stops.
Yeah, it's 35-28 now.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Kyle Pitts is still wide open and no one's throwing the football.
I was really hoping it was going to be Brock Bowers here, so you would just have Kyle Pitts and Brock Bowers on the same offense not getting the football. That would be outstanding.
Arthur Smith is gone. Don't worry.
I'll say if you want to irritate Kyle Pitts, not only do you draft another tight end, you draft him from his arch rival. Because remember, Kyle Pitts went to Florida. Yeah. You draft a Georgia guy to replace him at tight end.
Okay, here we go, Jimmy. You are up. If you had a master plan there to take Rome Odunze, it's gone. But you are on the clock again with the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, the Chicago Bears will make their pick in a second. But first, my phone just rang, and it's the Titans GM, and he has a message for Aaron Rodgers again. And it says, I don't know how to get ready to learn. Mike Williams has been placed on injured reserve, buddy. Huh. Okay, anyways. the Bears are going to take – who's the other offensive tackle? Talese Fuaga from Oregon State. We're taking him. I'm not going to give you – I have not watched a lot of Oregon State offensive line tape, to be honest with you. I was doing this thing on the Cavs pod last night where I was breaking down Donovan Mitchell pick and roll coverages right after the game, and I was like, I don't know that I watched the game carefully enough to be speaking – in this much detail on it. So I'm not going to do that this time. I'm just taking the tackle because we have our quarterback. We have two veteran receivers. This is the logical next step for our offense.
Tim, tell Jimmy who he just picked, because I'm not sure if he completely knows who he just picked.
Well, Fashanu and Alt for me were 1A, 1B offensive tackles. You know, you could take him either or whatever you order you want. And with Fashanu, when I wrote, when I was watching him, he's an outstanding mover. You know, he understands. And I think that's the number one thing for offensive linemen. I've said last week, you know, when I was on with Dan and Lance Rizzo, that I'm in the Mike Holmgren school of offensive linemen, where if you can't move, you basically can't play. And Fashanu is a great mover. What I also see, you know, when you watch him, he reacts well to different stunts and whatever twists are coming in front of him. So he has a good understanding of what's in front of him. So I love it. You know, I mean, I wasn't quite as big on the Darnell Wright pick a year ago, but, you know, I think with Fashanu, you have, you know, a true left tackle who can be there for the next, you know, 10 to 12 years. And, you know, when in doubt, pick a good tackle. And Fashanu seems like a great fit.
All right, Tim, you are up now with pick number 10. And I don't know if Aaron Rodgers is texting back anyone yet or anything like that, but Jimmy will let us know.
No, he's having a darkness retreat, right? Darkness retreat for Aaron. It's about that time.
Yeah, it's a new conspiracy theory for everybody.
Well, yeah. I will tell you, instead of announcing the pick, I think what they should do is just take a Photoshop of this player in a Pat McAfee-style black tank top. Because with the 10th pick, there's a reason I wasn't concerned about, you know, trading away Javon Kinlaw, just move with three guys, because there was going to be a guy I always wanted. At least one of four guys was going to fall to me at 10. And so with the 10th pick, the New York Jets select Brock Bowers, the tight end out of Georgia. And I'm going to say this 1,000 times. It's the Sam Laporta effect. Sam Laporta had almost 900 yards, 10 touchdowns last season. The Jets needed a receiver, and I think because of the position Brock Bowers plays, he's undervalued. I mean, all you have to do is watch Georgia the last 3 years, and Brock Bowers was the most dangerous player on the field when Georgia had the football. I mean, just a walking mismatch, you know, your classic, you know, elite receiving tight end. And with Aaron Rodgers, you're going to be throwing the ball a ton anyway. So I look at Bowers. He's a massive upgrade from what the Jets have right now in Tyler Conklin as a tight end. And I don't necessarily need Mike Williams if I have Garrett Wilson and Brock Bowers on offense. If Bowers was off the board, I was kind of fearing Bowers could have gone at number 9 because the Bears need another pass catcher. I would have been happy to take Fashanu and build up the offensive line after the failure of the Mekhi Becton experiment.
Okay, Brock Bowers, I want to see what he does on Thursday. If some team takes him this high, I know there's been some discussion about, you know, you don't get as much value necessarily monetarily out of a tight end in the first round, because that difference between what you pay in free agency versus what you give him in that rookie deal isn't as much. But if he can be the type of tight end people think he can be, that could be, I'm sure Aaron Rodgers will be very happy with that. All right, another break. We got the Chargers coming up, Denver, Las Vegas, New Orleans, and Indy. Nathan's going to lead us off on the other side.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Back here on our crossover pod, Buckeye Talk, Orange Brown Talk podcast. The Chargers, who traded out of the number 5 pick with Minnesota, they go on the clock for the first time here at number 11, Nathan.
And when the Chargers traded out of number 5, they were hoping, I was hoping, that one of like a couple, 3 players were still going to be on the board. We're pretty confident that they would be the way things are going. One of them was Bowers, so there was going to kind of be a decision to make. But now I think it's an easy decision for the Chargers. And they're going to take Quinyon Mitchell, the cornerback from Toledo here, who people think might be the best cornerback in the draft. So you're trading out of 5 where you could take one of those 3 receivers. But now you're getting someone who, again, might be the best defensive back in this draft. You're also picking up a 23, another first-round pick at 23. I think that is, if the Chargers had the opportunity to do that, I think they would do that. And there's a lot of appreciation out there for Quinyon Mitchell. Plus, now it's Jim Harbaugh taking a guy from sort of his backyard there in Toledo.
As Raiders GM, I was hoping Quinyon Mitchell would hang around a couple extra picks there, but it did not happen. So we are going to move on here. Denver and their brand new quarterback, Zach Wilson. Steven, you are up here at number 12.
Yay, Zach Wilson. Yay.
Hey, you got new uniforms too.
Yay, ugly uniforms. Go back to the ones from the 90s. Yay. I think we have to give Zach Wilson a chance, right? He's a former first-round draft pick, former number 2 pick in the NFL draft, and guys who typically go that high do get second chances when they move on somewhere else, especially since now I wasn't able to trade up and get any of the big 4, well, big 3 plus JJ, however you want to view him. I think I have to give him a chance. I think it will be interesting to see what happens with Michael Penix and Bo Nix, because I'm intrigued to see if either one of them randomly sneaks into the first round at that point, but it won't be in Denver. I'm just going to go with Denver needs a lot. Right. So let's keep building that defense. We've got a great cornerback in Patrick Surtain. Let's get our front together. And with Dallas Turner not going to the Falcons and him still being on the board here, I think it's a quality pick to get Dallas Turner here from Alabama.
Question for the group. Do you need to give Zach Wilson an opportunity?
Yes, you do. You need to give him an opportunity so you can get the number 1 overall pick next year.
There we go.
You need to throw him out there for 17 games and let him play all 17 games. And
bingo.
Say, we believe That's in you, sir. Go play Zach Wilson. You can bingo. Do it. And then when you lose 45-10 every week, yep. You can say, get him next week. And then you can take Quinn Ewers or Shedeur Sanders or whoever else you really want to take next year. They're in a tough spot because they're in – cap hell right now with everything going on. So like, I don't think you really need to do anything yep. of significance to build around a quarterback right now. I think that this is a really good pick because build the defense, get everything kind of squared away, and then figure out what's going to happen on offense later. Cause you got some time. It's going to be a while for Denver.
I call this the let's get the defense right. So Carson Beck can make mistakes in 2025.
Okay, that works.
Or George Payton could just drive a car to Boulder and pick up Shedeur Sanders next April.
Does George Payton want free agents sliding into Shador's DMs next offseason? That's how Colorado's handling the transfer portal right now.
All right, Las Vegas here on the clock. Again, a team that needs a lot. They need a quarterback of the future here at some point, but I just don't think that guy is – I don't know if I want to reach for that guy. So I'm looking at 2 names here. I could go corner, but I think I'm actually going to go interior line. I love Max Crosby, one of the best edge rushers in football. I think if you can build up your pass rush, that's going to make everything easier on the defense. So I think with the Las Vegas Raiders, I'm going to take Byron Murphy out of Texas, the defensive tackle out of Texas. I want to put as many good players on that line with Max Crosby and just go dominate people up front on my defense. And I'll kind of worry about everything else later because I do have some things on offense, but this is sort of like Denver. This is still kind of a long build, I think, ahead for Las Vegas. So I'm going to go with the interior D lineman here. Tim, is this the right pick?
Well, I do like Byron Murphy. I you know, I'm still trying to figure out, you know, why Jerjon Newton from Illinois is like falling like a rock in this draft, because I really like Newton. But I think with Murphy, you have a guy with pro ready size already, 300 plus pounds. You know, he's got that twitchy explosiveness that you want to look for in the defensive line, especially defensive tackle, because as we all know, the one place quarterbacks don't want pressure is right up the middle. He can play with power, but he's also got more than enough agility to be really good in position. And I will say, if I'm the Raiders, I'm not liking at all what I saw out of Tyree Wilson last year. There was just not a lot really that I could be excited about watching him in that situation. But so plus you have a guy in Antonio Pierce as the new head coach. I love that hire, by the way, keeping him around, a defensive-minded guy. You know, just keep adding bodies in there. And obviously when you have Max Crosby, you know, it takes a lot of attention away from other guys. So I think that's a pick that makes a lot of sense to me. I would have looked at corner as well. Terrion Arnold would have been a good fit here, but can't argue with a good defensive tackle there.
And added Christian Wilkins too. I always kind of like stacking where you had somebody in free agency and then you had somebody in the draft. So I just, that front four has the potential to be an absolute game wrecker. So I feel good about this pick. So now we're going to move on to New Orleans, and Jimmy, you're back on the clock.
Back to back big boys. We're taking Jerjon Newton from Illinois. Because I think interior pass rush is like one of the most underrated skills attributes that you can have from a defense, right? Like if you're pressuring a quarterback's lap, you're forcing him to, like, that's the hardest type of pressure I think for a quarterback to deal with. Like someone comes off the edge, step up, someone gets in your lap, now you're pushing this guy into guys who might be blocked otherwise, right? Like I just think that if you can if you can put a pressure on a quarterback right in his face, there's no other more effective way to disrupt him. So also have a defensive minded head coach. In terms of where the Saints are going long-term, nobody really knows. They're just trying to repeatedly prove that the salary cap doesn't actually exist, but it's a good player. We'll take him.
Yeah. We're starting to see defensive tackles get paid a little bit more too. And I think I'm with you. I think that's sort of the next wave here is we're going to see that interior, the defensive line, start to get beefed up. These guys start to get a little more attention, which brings us to Indianapolis at number 15. And that's Andrew.
Yeah. Really happy with this. We're going to take Terrion Arnold, the corner out of Alabama. It was him and Quinyon Mitchell. Those were the two guys that I was really kind of looking for. I think Indianapolis has always kind of sneaky had a really good team except quarterback. One of their big needs on corner or on defense is corner. I really like Juju Brents, the second round pick they got last year out of Kansas State. Long, can run. I think that's a really nice corner. Then you have Kenny Moore in the slot, but you don't really have anybody on the outside that can go with that. And you play in a division now with the Houston Texans, and the Houston Texans are going to be a problem throwing the football for a few years. So I think adding in the secondary is big. I think that the Colts, I like Anthony Richardson a lot. I think that there can be a lot to like about that situation moving forward, and got to build the defense. And that's why I really like Terrion Arnold. I think this is a really nice value pick. I think this is a really nice positional fit for the Colts.
All right, let's go ahead and get to the halfway point here, Tim. Go ahead and make Seattle's pick.
Well, I think it's going to be offensive line. That's where I would go. And I'm torn right now because Talese Fuaga is still on the board. And as much as I don't necessarily need tackle, I could have no issue with kicking him inside, you know, to guard it potentially, because I think he's more of a power lineman, power, you know, your old school right tackle. But you already have, if we're the Seahawks, you already have two starting offensive tackles in Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas. So I think they go guard here, and I think they go with Troy Fatanu, you know, the Washington kid. So they say in-state they take the number one guard in this draft, you know, by a lot of measures, played all over the line. He was obviously an offensive he was a left tackle for most of his career, but I think he could be just a dominant guard in the NFL level. And I think, you know, getting a value pick at a guard at 16, you know, in a physical NFC West where you have to play the Giants twice a year. I mean, you have to play the 49ers twice a year, excuse me. Getting a guy like Fatanu there, you know, feels like a Seattle pick, because they've been typically one where they've not necessarily cared about, you know, where a player's ranked or whatever. They care more about just they go for their guys. They unabashedly pick their guys. And I feel like Fatanu seems like their guy.
Okay, we've reached halfway. We're going to take another break. And then when we come back, we'll kind of roll through the second half of this draft.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Back on our crossover pod, Orange and Brown talk and Buckeye talk. Caleb Williams was the number one pick, followed by Drake May and Jaden Daniels. The Giants moved up to take him number three, trading with New England. Steven took Marvin Harrison for Arizona. J.J. McCarthy went to Minnesota. Malik Nabers to New England. Joe Alt to Tennessee. Rome Odunze to Atlanta. Talese Fuaga to Chicago. The Jets took Brock Bowers at 10. Then at 11, it was Quinion Mitchell to the Chargers. Dallas Turner to Denver at 12. Byron Murphy to Las Vegas at 13. Jerzon Newton to New Orleans at 14. Terrion Arnold to Indy at 15. And then Tim just took the guard, Troy Fatanu, at number 16. Steven, you're up for Jacksonville at number 17.
So the Jags need a corner. And I thought we were going to get Arnold. And then Andrew took him. But we still need to take a corner. I think this is a pretty decent corner draft class. And so I'm going to go with Cooper DeJean here out of Iowa, who I thought had two pretty quality seasons the last 2 years. And just for the sake of this is what he looks like against NFL level wide receivers. When Iowa played Ohio State last year, he three of eight for 118 yards, but 105 of those went up against the one guy who's not going to be a first round draft pick. And that's Julian Fleming. And one of which was a deep ball against Emeka Ebuka, one catch for 13 yards, just two targets against Marvin Harrison Jr. He gave up nothing and he got targeted on a go ball to Jackson Smith, the Jigba, which ended up in an incompletion as well. But outside of that, I just think he's had two pretty quality seasons on. We can laugh about Iowa's offense all we want. It's consistently been one of the best defenses in the country over the last couple of years. And Cooper DeJean has been a big reason because of that.
I got a little nervous. Well, you know, look, I'll just be honest. I'm thinking cornerback for my pick coming up here. So I get a little nervous. Maybe you're going to take the guy I was targeting. We'll see if Nathan jumps in and takes that guy. I misspoke and said Andrew, because Andrew, I almost wanted to give you the Cincinnati Bengals. Maybe
I thought about that.
I felt like maybe that's what I should have done, was given you Cincinnati, because you have that institutional knowledge of the Bengals. So maybe you can help Nathan make this pick.
Yeah, well, they don't need a quarterback. There's number one, so that rules out Michael Penix. They don't need a receiver, unless you want to trade T. Higgins with 18. You want to make a splash on this podcast, you can trade T. Higgins.
No, I think they're good there, but I don't have to have covered the Bengals to know that they need offensive line help. I actually think that in the perfect world, the Bengals might have wanted one of those two interior defensive tackles, the defensive linemen, to have fallen this far. And I don't know that could happen. That could very well happen, I guess, on Thursday night. But there's still some really good offensive tackle talent on the board here. I guess I have my pick of two or three guys who I think are pretty solid. I guess I could see them going edge, but it's just people. It's been just constant there now for this whole window of the Joe Burrow era, that offensive line has been a drawback. So I'll take Olufoshanu, the tackle from Penn State here, and just giving them any bodies up front, I think, is they're semi-desperate for it. And the window doesn't last forever. And if you can stabilize things up front a little bit, give Burrow and those receivers more time to be what they obviously are, then maybe that can help push you across the edge before that window gets too advanced and too expensive.
Well, and they just lost Jonah Williams too. Jonah Williams right. left. I know they signed Trent Brown, but I don't know. I think offensive line of any kind here would be good for Burrow.
Tim, what do you think of how the tackles are shaking out here?
Well, I mean, I was kind of surprised, you know, Fuaga ahead of Fashanu. I know we were talking about it earlier. I was talking about Fashanu earlier, where I said Fuaga is more of the right tackle prototype. Fashanu is the left tackle prototype. And I think, you know, because of where the Bengals are right now, Orlando Brown, you know, his first season in Cincinnati wasn't quite what I think Irvin expected it to be. Trent Brown seems like a stopgap. So here in this case, if Fashanu falls, I would imagine Duke Tobin is doing a backflip right now, because you can move Fashanu to left tackle and then push Orlando Brown, even though he wants to be a left tackle, over to right tackle, and then you could really have the offensive line that Joe Burrow deserves.
I'm not sure Orlando Brown's going to take that standing up. So that might be a problem if you tell Orlando Brown, hey, the reason why you're here no longer applies. I think Orlando Brown would stick at left tackle. But yeah, either way, I think, you know, adding a tackle, you're helping out in some way.
Because it worked so well the last time they did it, and they went and brought a left tackle in and told their left tackle to move over to right tackle, huh?
Yeah, it was great. Don't you know? Nothing happened. Nothing was the matter. There was no drama surrounding it. It was great.
I love the idea of like a diva tackle and like tackle clout. Orlando Brown's like, no, I want to stand over here. I won't do it. I won't move. I won't stand over there. I have to stand over here.
Well, that's what the Browns might be dealing with here at some point soon in the near future. Okay, let's move on. And I'm going to take a cornerback here for the LA Rams at number 19. The Rams have, you know, for a good football team, they've got some clear needs, but I like the idea of adding a corner here. And the guy I'm going to take, like his size, he's about 6'1". He ran a 4.28 40. I think there's a lot of athleticism there to work with. I'm going to take Nate Wiggins out of Clemson here for the LA Rams. I love that size and speed combo. Like 6'1" is 6'1" is a good sized corner. And I just like big corners that can run. So I'm going to go with Nate Wiggins here for the Rams, which brings us to the Pittsburgh Steelers and Jimmy.
So the Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't know if you guys noticed, Pittsburgh Steelers had a little internet trouble on draft day, because much like a lot of things about the facility, I don't think our internet's been updated since 1975. And we're hoping two things as a result of that. One, we're hoping that we didn't make Dan's post-pod editing life a little bit too hard. We're also hoping that no one took Brian Thomas while we were struggling with our internet, because that's who we want, receiver out of LSU. Brian Thomas, very fast. A little work to be done around the edges, I think. Some refinement to be made in the route running. But we're a team that we're basically treating Justin Fields like he's our rookie quarterback now, because the Bears did so little for him that, you know, maybe his development's a little stunted. So we're treating him like a rookie quarterback. I know we also have Russell Wilson in the version of this world where I'm running the Steelers. We're not too concerned about Russell Wilson. And I mean, look, the Steelers, he's on a vet men deal. So I don't think they should be that concerned about it either. So we want to give Justin Fields as many tools as we possibly can to succeed. And we think that Brian Thomas and George Pickens will be a great first step in that endeavor.
When you were talking about the internet there, Jimmy, I just had a vision of Mike Tomlin and Omar Khan in offices next to each other yelling about like, hey, are you on the dial up? Can I plug in and get online here while they're trying to make these draft picks? Okay. Let's have a little Justin Fields discussion here. It obviously didn't work out in Chicago. I don't know exactly what sort of NFL quarterback Justin Fields is going to be, but I think we've learned over the years that if a guy has a skill set, if he's talented, you can put him in an offense and make it work. So I'll just ask you guys, what do you think Justin Fields ultimately is in the NFL based on what we've seen and based on what we know he can do?
Yeah, it's a very fair question at this point, because as much as he's been an effective weapon in some ways, he hasn't necessarily been an effective NFL model quarterback, like a passing quarterback. And he hasn't won. And he definitely had some drawbacks there talent-wise in Chicago, and in terms of structure and in terms of, you know, having to go through a couple systems. But it's not like there were metrics supporting him as a good passer that just weren't showing up in the results, right? He wasn't a very good passer there. He wasn't fundamentally very strong there. So I think what's the best case scenario for him, if he was going to get traded, was something like this, where now you're paired with a true veteran guy who can probably help mold what you do have. And it's even someone of I wouldn't say a similar skill set, because I think Russell Wilson stepped in right away and showed he could be an NFL caliber passing quarterback in a way that Fields hasn't. But maybe this is the calibration that he's needed, would be to work with a veteran like this, a former MVP, like this kind of level of a player, to help maybe push him towards what he could become.
So I've had this debate with a lot of people on this podcast that just weren't, when we had this debate, we were not on this podcast. We just did this in our free time. And I think the truth about Justin Fields is probably the most boring answer that you can probably think of, which is probably not great for this conversation. But I just think that that's where a lot of NFL quarterbacks are and end up, like somewhere in the middle. I've compared it to my friends of like Kirk Cousins positive, Kirk Cousins negative. Like if things are good, you look pretty good. And if things are not, you don't look that great. And there's not that many quarterbacks who are going to look bad no matter what, or who are going to look elite no matter what. I think two things can be true. I think number one, the Bears could have not done enough for Justin Fields. I think you could look at the skill position players that they added or did not add, more accurately, the offensive line that they did not add, the coaching fiasco. Like I think that you can point to all of that and say, yeah, the Bears should have done more. Of course you have to do more when you have a young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, you know, a quarterback that you're trying to build around. I also think Justin Fields should have been better. Like, I also think that, you know, you give Justin Fields, I'll put it like this. I think that there was a lot of talk about the Bears as if they were like the 0-16 Lions or Browns, and they went 7-10. Like, oh, the Bears were terrible. Nobody could succeed in that environment. They were a mediocre NFL team. They weren't awful. They were just not good. And I think that there was a lot of kind of revisionist history with Justin Fields where it's, hey, everybody wants to trash this guy, or everybody wants to say that this guy is going to be elite in Pittsburgh now that he has a real franchise. And it's like, the Bears can be not a good franchise, and Justin Fields could have done more. Like, both of those things can be true. And you can think that he'll be better in Pittsburgh because it's a better team. He'll be with a better defense. He'll get the ball more. He'll be in better spots. He'll have the best offense that he'll have been around in his NFL career. You can expect the results to rise, but I also think it's completely fair to say that we don't really know about Justin Fields, and he's probably just okay because we haven't seen it yet. Like, at some point, if you're going to be that level of quarterback, if you're going to be an above average, really good quarterback in the NFL, you're going to have to do it when the situation is not ideal, the situation is not perfect. And if the situation's not ideal and not perfect, and we're saying that it needs to be for Justin Fields, I think we kind of have our answer.
I don't think the situation has to be perfect. I just think it has to be competent, and it wasn't competent the last couple of years there. I don't know what the ceiling is, but I know what it would look like if it does hit. And maybe that's not this year. Maybe he just needs a year to reset, learn behind Russell Wilson, which I think was a good pairing, because a lot of what Russell Wilson's skill set is can be attributed to Justin Fields, a more developed Justin Fields, a lot of same stuff, get him outside the pocket, play action, deep shots and stuff like that. But I think what it looks like, and I'm not saying he's going to be an MVP caliber quarterback, though it's funny, he finished top 10 in MVP voting 2 years ago, which is hilarious to me how some of these guys get votes sometimes. But I think it's Jalen Hurts and what Philadelphia asked Jalen Hurts to do. Jalen Hurts finished second in MVP voting and had like 22 touchdown passes, but he also had a bunch of rushing touchdowns, which came because of that stupid tush push that cost me many of fantasy games over the last couple of years. But I think that's what it looks like, where you tap into this guy who's a bigger quarterback, can be a red zone threat in the run game for you. You get him on the run, and you don't ask him to do too much. You don't ask him to sit back and drop back and throw 35 plus passes a game. You ask him to throw it 20 to 26 times per game, and then you run him 8 to 12 times per game. But then also the skill positions around him are what do a lot of the work. And it's what, if you take it back to Ohio State, that's what his days with Ohio State were. It was a lot of let the skill around you do the work for you. You just make the right decision. So if he spends this year learning how to do that while the Steelers are consistently building things, because the Steelers have been a routine playoff team, right? That's just what kind of what they are. If they build a system around him that's competent, I think what Jalen Hurts was 2 years ago is the ceiling. Now, whether he reaches it or not, that's a different conversation. But I do know what the execution can look like, and that's what the Bears weren't doing for the last 3 years.
Okay, real quick, as the Steelers, because this is my guy, this is my quarterback. The Bears went 7-10 last year. Is not an argument that moves me when we're talking about Justin Fields needing to be better, because A, what happened before then? They didn't win a lot of games, which was the majority of his time there. B, why were they 7-10? Because they had a really good defense and their quarterback was doing stuff. Here's the thing about Justin Fields is that you like the numbers. If you want to just play the numbers game, you're not going to be wowed. You watch him like that game against the Browns, Dan, when he the play where he's scrambling around at, near the red zone and throws a bullet in the back of the end zone to Cole Kmet, like that's wow level stuff. There's another play in that game where he did something similar and then threw like a 60-yard pass down the field, hit a guy in the bread basket, and he dropped it. Kind of the encapsulation of the Justin Fields situation in Chicago. The other thing I would say is that if Justin Fields can be in that Kirk Cousins tier, then I've already won as the Steelers, because you can't compare Justin Fields to these other boring cookie cutter Kirk Cousins quarterbacks who can throw over the middle on time and be elevated by their supporting cast. Because what if you gave Kirk Cousins 4.4 speed? That kind of changes the equation a little bit, doesn't it? Like that, and that's kind of why Kirk Cousins is Kirk Cousins, because he can't create outside of structure because he can't move around like Justin Fields. So there's a lot there, and I just to kind of circle it back to the pick I made. That's why I'm picking Brian Thomas, because we don't have a ton of time to figure out what we have with Justin Fields. Like, they have a fifth-year option. I don't know what they're going to do with that. So we have a one-year eval period, and we want to learn as much as we possibly can. So let's give him some receivers.
So I want to ask Jimmy real quick before we move on to my pick here. In your ideal world with Brian Thomas as your fancy new first-round draft pick, how soon is he catching passes from Justin Fields in real games?
Oh, well, this is a week one situation. I don't care about Russell Wilson.
It's a week one situation.
I don't care.
Okay, so no Russ.
I don't care about Russell Wilson. I don't know if that's how the Steelers will operate, because they're very traditional and they very much believe – they are the kind of team that very much believes in a veteran hierarchy. But I just – if I were looking at the long-term trajectory of my franchise, like, I got to give this kid a chance as soon as possible.
I like what Steven was saying there, because I've thought about this with Justin Fields. If you put him, it doesn't have to be this guy specifically. Could you give Justin Fields like Greg Roman for 2 years? And eventually the Greg Roman offense gets stale and you don't want anything to do with it. But could you put him in an offense like that? Or if you want to do Shane Steichen, you know, you mentioned the Eagles and Jalen Hurts. Can you put him with a coach who just for like 2 years can kind of unlock some of that ability? And like I said, I mean, Greg Roman ultimately held Lamar Jackson back. But there's got to be some offensive coordinator out there, somebody who really kind of – and I don't know if Arthur Smith is that guy, to be honest with you.
I was going to say, I know who it is. I know who it is.
But at least you unlocked Lamar, and then the next guy kind of took it to the next level. We're still trying to unlock Justin Fields. So that's what step one is here. And then 2 years from now – when it's stagnant, we're going, oh, they can't get out of the wild card round. Then you bring in the guy who gets him over the top. And now what are we looking at, Lamar? He's like the second best quarterback in the NFL right now and you know, on down the list.
Yeah, I'm bringing in Greg Roman as my run game coordinator. And the second he tries to walk into a quarterback meeting, I have like a little taser that I can just get out. No, out of the passing room. We are not dealing with concepts today.
And it's a 2-year contract that cannot be renewed. That's like part. That's
no,
2 years.
Yeah, yeah, it's got to go. Over,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, cannot be renewed. Exactly.
Renew it, no matter how it's gone. All right, Andrew, you're up for Miami.
Yeah, this was the biggest layup that I will have during this entire draft. I'm going to take Laiatu Latu, the edge rusher out of UCLA. This is a guy who fits what the Dolphins need desperately. We've seen them kind of add on offense. They drafted Achane last year. He was really good. They have Mostert in the backfield. Their receiving core is what it is. I think you can find a third receiver to go with Waddle and Hill later. But this team needs defense really badly. Their defense is getting older. Bradley Chubb blew his knee out on New Year's Eve last year. That's not good. Jalen Phillips tore his Achilles at whatever they call the field turf in New Jersey. That was not good. Like, they need defensive line help. They need pass rusher help. And look, I know Achilles, like, I know, you know, Cam Akers can do it, and there's all players that can come back from Achilles now. You can't rely on those type of things. You need an edge rusher, I think, in just in general. There was another edge rusher on the board that I did consider that I will leave for somebody else to talk about, but Latu is the guy for me out of UCLA. I think he's a guy that can contribute immediately, and you need somebody, frankly, to get after the passer quick because you're not going to have Phillips or Chubb early on in the season.
Number 22, Philadelphia, it's you, Tim.
Well, Howie Roseman is on the clock after spray painting the Eagles logo to add some red to it over the past few years because it's basically been the Georgia pipeline in Philly, and I am tempted to continue that because Amarius Mims is on the board and Lane Johnson is not getting any younger. I mean, he's already 33 years old. His birthday is in May, so he's going to be 34 in a few weeks. So I could do that and have my tackles shored up for a while because Amarius Mims needs a – I think we're at the point now with the offensive tackles where these guys maybe need a little time. I would take Mims over J.C. Latham in this situation because I think Mims has a higher ceiling than Latham. However, Jared Verse is still on the board. They just traded away Hassan Reddick. And I know the Eagles, you know, they had, what, I think it was like 70 sacks or whatever in 2022 when they went to the Super Bowl. I look at their depth chart now. Bryce Huff is a nice, sneaky free agent pickup. Obviously, Josh Sweat, I think, is really good. I'm still wondering about Nolan Smith, you know, and his potential. I'm from no means giving up on Nolan Smith because I remember I was trying to think of where this was said, but Bill Belichick appeared on a podcast recently and basically said, like, he doesn't judge rookies till the middle of their second season. So I think for me, Smith still is kind of, we'll see. But I'm adding that pass rush room. So with the 22nd pick, I'm taking a guy who probably would have gone top 15 last year in Jared Verse from Florida State. Explosive first step, 9 sacks, 12 and a half tackles for loss. All these top three edge rushers, Dallas Turner, Latu, Jared Verse, extremely high motors. And I think that's a theme you'll see with this defensive line class. What Mel Kiper's probably going to say 8,000 times over the weekend, high motor. These guys are relentless. And I think Jared Verse, you know, he probably lost a little bit of money going back to Florida State, even though his team went undefeated this season. In the regular season, of course, missed out on the playoff. But, you know, I look at Verse, you know, just continuing to add that pass rush group. That's what Howie Roseman loves to do. He loves to just create havoc for opposing quarterbacks.
Okay, we are moving on here. The Chargers, who used their first pick in their trade down at number 11 on Quinyon Mitchell, they are now up at number 23. And Nathan, it is once again you on the clock.
Yeah, I don't think this worked out in maybe the most ideal ways for the Chargers. I think they would have loved for Brian Thomas to somehow slip all the way down to them here. I think that would be maybe the ideal spot because I think there's maybe a gap between him and who you'd have next at receiver. I'm not that enamored by the next guys on the list. And the great value that's still on the table is at offensive tackle still, I think, or offensive line in whatever way you want to say it. And I respect Tim's research here and his love for Amarius Mims, but I'm going to have the Chargers go ahead and take J.C. Latham from Alabama. And just a position where they could use some help, have lost some guys. It's not necessarily their most glaring position of need, I don't think. I just feel like there's a lot of value to be taking some of these offensive linemen as late as 23rd, the way this has worked out.
I will say about Latham, sorry if I interrupt real quick. I think he's a safe pick in the sense that, you know, he may have to kick him into guard. But for a Jim Harbaugh team, I mean, you put a powerful offensive lineman in a Jim Harbaugh offense. I mean, that's a pretty good fit right there.
And that one of the reasons I took him is I think there is some versatility there that he could be what they need him to be more than like having the idea of like he has to fit at a certain spot.
That sound you just heard was Justin Herbert calling his agent asking to leave. They got their OC's Greg Roman, speak of the devil, but they have the Baltimore backfield now, which is J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, and then the three receivers are Quentin Johnston, Josh Palmer, Darius Davis. Like, Chargers are in some trouble, and I'm not even saying Nathan did a bad thing here. I just, their receiver depth is just in such a way that it's not great in LA.
100%. I'm not sure that they can't get a receiver in the second round that's as good as who they would maybe have to reach for here.
I think Nathan's pick matched what Harbaugh is.
There's that too.
And so that's, if Jim Harbaugh wasn't their coach, I think I would have been looking at you like, why didn't you just take a wide receiver here? But Jim Harbaugh has shown us, whether it's in the NFL or in college football, how he likes to play football. And this matches how he likes to play football, which is three clouds in a dust. And then be weird in the press conference.
By the way, like, they're absolutely going to take Blake Corum, aren't they? Like, in like the second round. Like, there's no way.
I mean, in this scenario, Roman Wilson.
But not here. I think he will take Roman Wilson, but in a couple rounds, not here in the first round.
Yeah, right. And then Roman Wilson, people will be like, Jim, why didn't you take Marvin Harrison? Roman Wilson could start talking about Louis Vuitton again.
Exactly. Art imitates life. Keeping it real here.
All right, Steven, you're up at number 24 for Dallas.
So I was actually having a conversation in my head about Amarius Mims and J.C. Latham before making this pick. And did I want to go with the guy who's clearly a tackle, or the guy who maybe has a little bit of versatility, and Nathan just made my pick for me. So I think the Cowboys took Tyler Smith last year. He's one tackle, and let's sure up the other tackle with another young guy with Amarius Mims, and let's sure up the Cowboys' tackle situation for what should be the next 3, 4, 5, 6 years here.
All right, tackle's coming off the board. Jimmy, you're up now with Green Bay.
I'm going Kool-Aid McKinstry, both because he has a fun name and because you got to know your division, right? Like, the Packers are in – their contention window is now, right? Jordan Love, we think we got something here. It's time to start going forward. That means – we got to start thinking about the matchups in our division. The Detroit Lions have Amon-Ra St. Brown and, depending on how you think about him, Jameson Williams. The Minnesota Vikings have Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison. The Chicago Bears have DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, and now Caleb Williams. So now I want Jaire Alexander and Kool-Aid McKinstry. This is, the NFL, it's not a, like you don't play your base defense very much anymore. It's a defensive back driven league as much as it is a wide receiver and passing driven league, right? So I need someone to cover those receivers, and I'm going Kool-Aid.
Okay, pick number 26, Tampa Bay. And that's going to be you again, Nathan.
Yeah, they were hoping to get the Kool-Aid man here. That was who I had sort of targeted for them. And I thought that was one that made the most sense. Not super enamored by some of the other options here, but interior offensive line is a need, and I'm going to have them grab Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon, who I think is probably the consensus best interior, at least certainly the best center here, and just a position where they need help, but they need a lot of help. I don't think they can go wrong with pretty much anything here. If any of those edge guys had fallen just a little bit more, that would have probably been the best. The edge guys over the corners, and we almost got there with Kool-Aid, but they'll take the center from Oregon here.
Quick aside, if you're the Packers social team, how many meetings is Kool-Aid McKinstry crashing and going, oh yeah, during training camp? Like in the receiver room, quarterback room? Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's like you just, like, every meeting room you have, like, or even when you draft him, like, you have like one of those high school football paper signs, and he just bursts through it, and everyone says, oh yeah, we got to do that.
If he gets a pick, that needs to be what they tweet out every single time.
They're going to have to hire like 5 new social media coordinators just for him alone.
It's his own economy. It's the Kool-Aid economy.
yes.
Let's move on to Arizona. Steven, their final pick of the first round.
Yeah, so first and foremost, we as the Cardinals want to say we hate C.J. Stroud, because this was supposed to be another really good first-round draft pick, and then C.J. decided that he's, I mean, maybe the best quarterback the Texans have ever had in organizational history. So we hate C.J. Stroud. We hate Will Anderson. We hate that entire organization.
Careful with that distinction. This is Origin Brown talk. They like another Texans quarterback over here.
Like I said, as the Cardinals, we hate the Houston Texans for randomly deciding to be a playoff team in year one of a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach. Who does that other than other teams in the past? They need a lot here, and I'm going to go with Chop Robinson and pair him with Zaven Collins, just some guys coming off the edge here on third down. Some of the other options we wanted, some tackles, some cornerbacks came off the board here. This pick just all around for the Cardinals, I think in real life, went from when they made these decisions, they thought this was going to be a really good pick. And now it's in a spot where you start looking at your board and guys you're falling in love with. And just like it's happened right here, it might happen in real life where a lot of the guys they fall in love with might not be on the board. So I'm going to take Chop Robinson here, but I'm also open to the idea that maybe they just trade this pick out of the first round and move forward and try to get some more capital out of it.
We'll avoid the Deshaun Watson, CJ Stroud debate because we're an hour and 25 minutes in on this. But
thank you. I don't.
You might not be wrong, but we'll avoid that for now. Let's move on to number 28, Andrew, the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, this was the pick that I was least excited to make,
which is why you're not making it.
Yep, there you stole my thunder, Stephen Means. Oh, Stephen, I hate you. Oh,
he just like
Stephen
pulled
Means.
An Adam Schefter. Nope.
I know. I was what just happened was exactly what's going to happen on Thursday night. We're all going to be watching the draft, and ESPN or NFL Network or whatever you're watching is going to be talking about something, and then Stephen's the guy at the draft party where everybody's waiting for the pick, and he goes, "I know who it is. They're going to take blank." And he looks over and says who the pick is. And you're like, dude, I'm watching the. So, yeah, we traded the pick.
That was Andrew at my house during week 17 of the NFL season. We both are playing in the fantasy championship that week. And we have two TVs in my living room. He's just staring at his phone and like, oh, touchdown, touchdown. Like, shut up, dude. Shut up.
Thanks, Jimmy. I hate the people on this podcast. So, yeah, we traded the pick. We traded it to the Denver Broncos for Courtland Sutton.
What?
Trade is 1-for-1, 28 for Courtland Sutton straight up. Stephon Diggs is gone. We need someone to tweet cryptic tweets about the quarterback now. Stephon Diggs leaves 160 targets, 107 catches. Somebody's got to replace that. I think Courtland Sutton is really good. I think he's just played with terrible quarterbacks in his career. We need somebody to play on the outside. We cannot go into a season with Justin Shorter, Khalil Shakir, and Curtis Samuel as our three receivers. And I didn't feel good about taking Ladd McConkey either. Ladd McConkey, or we're going to take Keon Coleman. I didn't feel good about that. We're going to take a guy who can be a number one receiver in this league with a real quarterback. We've traded it to Denver.
Okay. In what universe is Courtland Sutton worth a first-round pick? We still think he could be a number one. What is this, draft day for Courtland Sutton?
Mm-hmm. By the way.
How long has it been?
I want to make it abundantly clear. I did not present this offer to Andrew.
He came
to me straight up wide receiver to Courtland Sutton for a first-round pick. So the Broncos in this world have now gotten rid of Judy, who we didn't want to pay, and gave him to the Browns, and we got rid of Courtland Sutton, and now we're about to get younger at wide receiver hey, Zach, show us you're a good quarterback, or more importantly, please lose for us.
For clarity, we did go after another receiver. The 49ers were unwilling to move Brandon Ayuk. We did go dumpster diving for that, trying to pull a receiver out. I just really didn't want to pick at 28.
You ended up dumpster diving.
That's fine.
You were shopping in the front of the store, and then you're like, wait, did someone just throw Brandon Ayuk in the trash? What if I just grabbed that?
This is the dumpster that was like falling apart and rusted out, so they had to throw it into
another dumpster. I really plan on being done talking because I was done making picks, but like – Courtland Sutton, he's played with a lot of bad quarterbacks. Now he plays for a bad GM, so I don't know what to say.
Can I interject and go to something that wasn't mentioned? As the official president of the Ladd McConkey fan club, the unofficial Cleveland.com Ladd McConkey fan club, I will not stand for this Ladd McConkey slander.
That's fine. We need somebody to play on the outside. We need somebody that can catch. Yeah, we need somebody with a big catch radius to catch Josh Allen passes.
Andrew, be honest. Anyway.
Ladd McConkey doesn't have that.
Is it because Ladd McConkey's white?
No, it's because he's six feet tall.
Yep. And white.
So just to recap here, Jerry Jeudy was traded for a fifth-round pick and a sixth-round pick. Courtland Sutton goes for a first-round pick. That's okay. Hey, you know what? Yep. Value is different for everybody, right? So, Steven, you're on the clock. Yep. Again, congratulations.
One wide receiver who's never had 1,000 yards in a season was traded for a fifth round draft pick. The other one, who hasn't had a 1,000 yard year in 5 years, is traded for a first round draft pick. We're going to get younger at wide receiver here. We're on the youth movement because we got to get our cap together, but also we got to start building towards our future a little bit here. Adonai Mitchell, 6'4", transfer from Georgia and had a breakout year for Texas. Quinn Ewers, man, had some weapons when he was at Texas this past year. 6'4" and ran a 4.34 40 at the NFL Combine. Give him to me. Give him to Zach Wilson. And like I said before, we got to give Zach Wilson a year to show us that he's anything. And give him young weapons, give him a decent defense, and let's see what happens out there in the AFC. And maybe it turns into absolutely nothing, and we're going to get our rookie quarterback a year from now. But either Zach Wilson's going to show us something, or we're going to have things in place for a young rookie quarterback a year from now to show up on this team and not feel like he has to just do it on his own because all the weapons are already in place. Adonai Mitchell, 6'4", 4.34 40. We're taking him. I think it's a bit of a steal at this point, especially when you add in the fact that we traded away our wide receiver too to go get him.
Yeah, no, the steal was the trade in the first place.
Yes.
Yeah. Considering what? That, should the Broncos take a flyer on one of the next quarterbacks here? Because all you have is Zach Wilson. Why not Penix or Nix?
I was just about to ask if this was time to have the Michael Penix conversation.
Possibly, right? Because I don't think anyone else is going to take him.
I thought maybe that might have been who you were moving up for. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Detroit, Baltimore, San Francisco, and Kansas City are up next. None of them are actually going to take any of those guys. And then
once you get into the day two, I mean, quarterbacks get kind of random where they go. So the Broncos could probably just like sit foot and still end up with one of those two quarterbacks and not have to give up anything for it while also still building your team.
Maybe, but they already didn't give up anything for this pick.
That's true.
it's a free roll. That's why I think if anything like this scenario played out, I think they'd be taking a quarterback here because you're taking Cortland Sutton for a potential starting quarterback.
There's still the Zach Wilson tank commander argument. If they like any of the quarterbacks next year, you know, maybe that's the way to go. But I just want also Buffalo Bills. You didn't have to draft the 6 foot white guy. It turns out with that pick, could have taken A.D. Mitchell.
Because I wasn't going to do it. I was going to draft the 6'4 black guy who's pretty fast, you know.
here's the thing with this pick though. You can't like this is the window for the Bills, and like I'm willing to hear it. Like I don't want to turn this in. I don't want to make this too long, but like how many like we tried Ayuk, we would have tried Deontay had Deontay not been traded. Like I don't know how many other receivers are out there that you look at and go, okay, this is like the best receiver on our team right now that you can really take a chance on because the Bills have to win now, right? Like you have a quarterback that can win you the Super Bowl every single year. You have to try and win now. That defense is getting older. You just traded Diggs. I know they have a decent amount of picks now. Like you can kind of get the defense younger. You can build up some offensive line stuff, but like you can't take a risk at 28 and just say, you know what, we're going to take insert. I don't think you can take a defensive player here because you cannot roll into a season with the receiving core that I mentioned. I think you have to trade this pick for a receiver. And I don't know who else you're getting that's like on the market that like you could really go after. Like, I don't know.
This is why you draft receivers. It's why you draft.
I don't know.
You are gaslighting your fan base right now. We can't take a risk. So naturally, we have to trade for this late 20s receiver who's never been that good and gets hurt.
Never been that good. All right.
He's never produced at a high level. Never produced at a high level and gets hurt. What?
Hey, Andrew, as the person who was on the receiving end of this, I completely respect and understand where you're coming from. I get it. Sometimes you just got to give up your first round pick for a wide receiver, too.
Call anyone else.
Tim, save us from this. Pick for Detroit.
All right, well, we are the hometown team. I'm speaking as Brad Holmes, the GM of the Detroit Lions, and while this discussion was going on, I just received my order from M&M's restaurant, Mom's Spaghetti, and just been eating it while this has all been going on. Well, the Lions, you know, I would have been tempted, obviously, to take an offensive lineman, Graham Barton, the guard/tackle from Duke, could pretty much play anywhere on the offensive line, but I thought initially I was going to blow up the draft with this decision. Doesn't Mike Sainristil look like the prototypical Detroit Lion? He doesn't have prototypical outside corner size, But that guy is an absolute football player. And you could argue, outside of J.J. McCarthy, no player has done more to flip the rivalry between Ohio State and Michigan than Mike Sainristil. Absolutely tough as nails. He's transitioned from receiver to corner outstandingly over the last couple of seasons. I think it was like 20 pass breakups in the last 2 years. So I would have taken Kool-Aid if he was there. But Sainristil seems like the way to go for me. And if I'm Brad Holmes, I'd also still be calling the Browns, see if I can steal Greg Newsome away and just create a secondary that matches up with what Green Bay has. Because all of a sudden, Green Bay is an issue with Jordan Love and all those receivers. So I'm matching to get me the absolute toughest guy left in this draft.
Ball player. He tackles people. He breaks up passes. He reminds me a lot of Mike Hilton, honestly, as a nickel corner. But outside is an interesting fit for him, too.
Okay, Baltimore Ravens here at number 30. And it seems like they do this every year, and everybody falls in love with the player. Look, the Ravens are really good at this. They draft good players. But for the second year in a row, I think I'm going to go receiver here because I still am not in love with this receiver core. Now, I like Zay Flowers. I think he has a chance to be special, especially with the way they get the football in his hands. I don't know about Rashad Bateman. I think he's good, but he's got to stay healthy. We'll see. So I'm going to dig into this receiver class a little bit, and I'm going to take one of these receivers still on the board. And I think the guy I'm going to go with is Troy Franklin out of Oregon. There's a lot of ways you could go. Obviously, Ladd McConkey's still on the board. So, Tim, you probably hate this pick. No, but I still feel like the Ravens need to keep adding to that receiver room. You could go edge rusher here. You could address that defense if you wanted to. But I still think it's about getting Lamar Jackson weapons.
Honestly, if I was Baltimore and I was looking for a receiver, for me, is Troy Franklin or Keon Coleman, because I'm looking for a perimeter guy. And Coleman, you know, is obviously so much bigger. I don't care about the 40 time. He ran faster in the drills than the 40, so maybe he just didn't feel like running the 40 super fast, or he didn't train as much as, you know, some guys do. But Troy Franklin, you know, it's interesting. I know Mary Kay Cabot wrote about him as far as the top five receivers on the Browns radar. And for me, he'd be one of about two or three guys that would make me stick around at 54 and not trade out of that pick as far as receivers go. But I love Troy Franklin's explosiveness. To me, it's the Marvin Mims effect of a year ago, where I said the same thing about Marvin Mims. Every time I watched him play, he did something. Mims did that at Oklahoma in 2022. Troy Franklin did that for me at Oregon in 2023. I don't care that he is 170 some pounds. He's 21 years old. He's got time to grow. He's got time to get bigger. And with Lamar Jackson's arm, why not get another absolutely incredible field stretcher in Troy Franklin?
Question for the draft expert.
Yes.
Real quick. How does Troy Franklin compare to late career Cortland Sutton?
He is way faster. And I'm also not concerned about the 170 pounds, because think of the culture Troy Franklin played in Oregon. They went from, you know, the finesse offense of Chip Kelly and Mark Helfrich to being absolutely tough as nails under Mario Cristobal and Dan Lanning over the last couple seasons.
Thank you.
Well, and I think the Ravens kind of have a sneaky need at receiver, despite like just mashing that position for years trying to figure out what was going to happen. Like, the Ravens are like masters of the, like, let's go get a dude who's 35, who's kind of past his prime. Like, they went and got Anquan Boldin many years ago. Yeah. They got Steve Smith. They just tried OBJ. OBJ didn't work. It seems like the Rashad Bateman thing's not really working out as they planned. Like, you need to spread a defense out so that Derrick Henry and Lamar can be what you want them to be. Because if defenses are able to just stack the box, because it's like, all right, it's Mark Andrews, Zay Flowers, and then a bunch of nobodies, that's a problem. So, yeah, I think the Ravens need a receiver fairly early in this draft, just because you need somebody opposite Zay, especially if Bateman's not it, and you need to spread some defenses out. Because if you're able to play light boxes with Derrick Henry and Lamar in your backfield, hoo boy, that's interesting.
All right, we got two picks left. The first one here is Nathan, San Francisco.
Like Mike Sanders still a lot. Hope that he would get here. Was a little dismayed when he didn't. But I think that Graham Barton as a consolation prize here is good. San Francisco could maybe plug him into a couple different places on the offensive line, depending on where he better fits. Just a good value to get an offensive lineman here and help shore up what's already a pretty strong roster.
Steven, I feel like you've been busy, but you get to make our final pick here for Kansas City.
I think this one's a pretty cheap in what they need. They, ever since Tyreek Hill left, they've been trying to conjure stuff together to figure out how they can get a team. You can find guys who can do that and take a top off a defense, especially when Mahomes is your quarterback and every team under the sun just wants to sit in too high against you because you have Patrick Mahomes. You have to have a player who can make that not matter. And I think Xavier Worthy showed the entire world, hey, I'm that player who can make that not matter. Patrick Mahomes just won a Super Bowl and he barely had any receiver weapons. It's a quality number tier. If you're pairing Xavier Worthy as a guy who can get past, get over the top of the, but this is an easy pick for you. But Xavier Worthy might fall to you anyway because he might just be a speed demon. But that's a match made when you're talking about Mahomes and this Chiefs offense.
That speed with Mahomes is scary. And kind of what, I don't know, what Mahomes can do with those types of receivers is scary. I like this. End of the first round, you've got a lot of needs filled. I mean, that's an obvious one. So why not go get a guy like this?
Imagine what Josh Allen could do with that kind of speed.
I know Worthy's the pick. Can I make my case for why I personally would have picked Ladd McConkey at 32?
Go for it.
Travis Kelce's getting older. And what's the number one thing everybody's saying about Travis Kelce? Everybody knows he's getting the football, and he somehow gets open.
Besides the that's Taylor Swift glad- stuff? That- Sorry.
That, yeah, that's not the number one thing that comes up with Travis Kelce these days, but maybe from a football sense.
I mean, as far as a football perspective goes. But I think Ladd McConkey is going to be the same type of player. We're going to be wondering, you know, people are going to be talking about him. You're like, if he's the number one guy, how is he still getting open? If you put all the, if you do all this stuff to him, he's still going to find a way to get open. He's just a tough dude. And I know he's not the not as fast as Xavier Worthy because nobody is, but I think this is probably me again standing on the Ladd McConkey bandwagon right here. But I just love his ability to separate. And when you have a scramble like Mahomes, you want a guy that's going to get open and you want a guy who's going to waste no time getting at the top speed. That's Ladd McConkey.
Okay, there we go. Our entire first round mock draft. I'm not going to read it all back to you because that would take forever. Hope you were paying attention. If not, go back and listen again. Give us another listen to see what you missed. Again, Buckeye Talk. Just look for it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Subscribe. They are knee deep in transfer portal, spring game, all of that stuff. Actually, you know what? I do want to ask you guys one quick question here. One quick question. Who's the top Buckeye drafted next year?
Next year. That's a tremendous question. Probably Jack Sawyer. Yeah, Sawyer at defensive end. If not him, then Emeka Buka at receiver, or perhaps Denzel Burke. Denzel Burke actually might be second on that list. Cornerback.
Well, like I said, Buckeye Talk, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Orange and Brown Talk, same thing. Give us a listen there. Hey. Wine and Gold Talk. Let's just promote them all. Wine and Gold Talk. Jimmy's jumping on that podcast while the Cavs are going through the playoff run here that they are on. So make sure you find that and get subscribed to that too. Appreciate it, guys. This was fun. For Steven, Nathan, Jimmy, Andrew, and Tim, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening, everybody.
God, I hate the people on this podcast.